Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about the game that everyone wants to know more about, which is Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and also, you know, a bit about Fortnite because Rishi really hates his life. So, speaking of which, games editor Rishi Alwani is here with us.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever and whenever you're listening to this episode of Transition. I think we're episode 91 today.
I hope so, yeah. Maybe. I'm really bad at counting.
I think 91.
Yeah. Friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani, is also here.
Giving everyone a Spartan kick, apparently.
Yeah, but before we get into Assassin's Creed Odyssey, just, because it's something we should talk about because it's finally happened. Fortnite gets real crossplay because now PlayStation 4 Fortnite players can play the game with those on Xbox One and Switch, and they already could play it with those on PC and mobile, but now it's with Xbox.
Despite what some sites would suggest, yeah, PS4 could always play with mobile and PC players.
Yeah, so basically, when sites like what Pocket Gamer would suggest, yeah, you can actually do that. So it's a thing. You can finally, if you're the sort who's been playing Fortnite, yeah, you can now do it with everyone. This doesn't change much for India because, for India, Fortnite crossplay was always PS4, PC, and mobile, because the Xbox One version doesn't exist in India till this day. And Epic Games did give us an update, which was basically saying, lol, no, nothing yet. And I think we just got Southeast Asia servers for Fortnite PC a couple of months back. So yeah, business as usual. But yeah, it's a thing. And if it's something you were clamoring for, it's finally happened.
And yeah, just before you move on, one last thing. In November, they let people who created another account for Battle Royale on another platform to merge purchases. They haven't given details about whether you can actually, like, you know, merge your accounts into one master account and play across all systems with the same thing or how it works. But yeah, they will let people who, like, I mean, I have two accounts, one for PS4 and one for Switch and mobile. So, like, and I bought stuff on both. So, yeah, let's see how they handle that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so in news that people actually care about, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So, we've already spoken a bit about this game because you guys had a chance to play it.
And
earlier.
We are recording this one day before release for the Gold and Medusa and multiple other editions, which we'll get into. But, yeah, the actual release day for the normal edition is Friday, October 5th. The Gold and more expensive edition is Tuesday, October 2nd.
Yeah, and we've played the game for review. We've played Final Code. And it's a lot of things. So let's get the obvious out of the way.
Is it 300?
Is it peaceful? Because Mahatma Gandhi's birthday is the release day.
Okay, so wait. I'll answer both your questions one by one. Is it 300? Yeah, that's like the first 10 minutes of gameplay. It's very 300. But is it peaceful? No, it's not peaceful, Pranay. This is probably, one of the more gorier entries in the franchise.
No, so jokes aside, yeah. What I really wanted to ask was, since, you know, this has more role-playing elements than previous games, and we've, you know, speculated how this could be the game that Mass Effect Andromeda should be.
Yeah.
I mean, should have been. So, can you avoid combat in this? Can you, like, use stealth and just, like, you know, not kill anybody and play through the game?
So the thing is, you can use stealth, but you use stealth in a way not as a pacifist means. Hmm. You use stealth as a way to not be detected, kill the primary targets you need to kill in an area, and move on.
Yeah, so you can't do, like, a Hitman where the entire level can be finished without killing anyone except the one target
you can,
that you're supposed
you can
to.
Do
but
that.
There are some quests which literally tell you to kill or to, like, you know, deal with some people, so, technically. So you might have to, but you can avoid killing as much as possible. The way the combat actually has, like, a detailed skill tree with three different focuses, you can, like, start putting stuff like your ability points when you level up into any. You can, like, focus on everything, or you can try and go all into, like, say, the assassin, which is the stealth focused thing, or the warrior, which is melee focused, or hunter, which is ranged. But I think most people will find a few abilities they really like and stick with that for the majority of the game until you unlock another set of abilities you can use, because you have active abilities and passive abilities here. The passive ones are, like, really useful in general because, you know, passive, they always give you a boost. But the active ones are good because, like, you, at least on the PS4, you hold L1 and you use any of the face buttons once you unlock and assign the abilities to do stuff. So you can do things like what I did, and at least initially, was a Spartan kick. Obviously, like, have to do that because otherwise you're playing the game wrong. There's also an ability which lets you load up your weapons with poison for a fixed amount of time, and you can attack people and they have a poison meter which builds up, which keeps damaging them. Really useful early on because, like, enemies, they aren't really health sponges, I'd say, but combat is never a joke. You need to pay attention when you're doing things. Playing stealthily focused assassin, like in actually as an assassin, really good, because the assassinate, when you like sneak up and take out someone, is like really, really powerful.
And it is so brutal. In past games, when you assassinate someone, it'll just be a simple stab and, you know, move on with life. Like literally tapping someone on the shoulder.
No, over here they're like, you know what?
It's like
we've invested in these animations. We will damn it show it to them.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you're gonna creep up from behind. You're gonna trip the guy. You're gonna make him fall face first. You're gonna turn him around and you're gonna, well, gut him and gut him good. So it actually does a very, it's very different in terms of its animations and in terms of the assassinations. In versus Origins and even versus the past game. So, you know, they take the traditional knife to the throat or knife to the head or knife to the heart and be done with it. Here, it's a lot more elaborate.
Yes.
And it actually works in a lot of ways to give you that visceral feel of being a Spartan warrior, because you play as either Alexios or Cassandra. They're of the lineage of King Leonidas. And your Spartan blood, and that also plays a part in the combat, making it more bloody. But what's also interesting, and this is something to note, is that I think from all Assassin's Creed games, this is the one with the most F-bombs. Yeah, I'm not joking.
How is that even possible? In the Greek era, was that even a swear word?
There are so many F-bombs. It's not even funny.
If you can't say that because you have fast travel, was fast travel there? That time is not even there.
Yeah,
now.
See,
that is not, you know, something that you can prove with certainty. But we can tell that, okay, the F-bomb...
Why would fast travel exist back then but not be a thing now?
Like, haven't you heard that theory where ancient India had flying machines?
Okay.
So. Yeah, but then...
What did you put in your coffee this morning, Pranay?
No, so they actually... So there's a ton of F-bombs. And, you know, in past games, it would be restricted to character stereotypes, like sailors. Because, you know, sailors are stereotypically known for swearing. But no, here it's quite liberal... And
the sailors can sing really well, though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, but that's the thing. So that's something to keep in mind if you're one who doesn't like hearing a dose of F-bomb.
Yeah. So two things. One is that I just hope some stupid people don't start protesting because you can play as a woman in this game. I think the last time we saw this was in some Civilization game.
No, where... I think those who are protesting are those who like Battlefield 5.
Yeah.
I think the Assassin's Creed crowd is pretty chill. Because have to understand, the outrage over not having a female character in the Assassin's Creed franchise has been a thing since Assassin's Creed Unity. Right. Now, Unity was, I mean, to me, one of the better games of this generation. I regret nothing. But
it's definitely one of the... better looking games still.
Yeah, still till this day. And there was outrage because you couldn't play as a female character, and which is and it was valid, because in a previous Assassin's Creed game, Assassin's Creed Liberation, you could play as a female character, and that was a year and a half prior. So people did have a valid reason to hate on Ubisoft for it. And in fact, Ubisoft's response was the best, was it's too complicated to do it. Which is funny, because a year after Unity was Syndicate, and Syndicate let you choose between a female or male character. You could switch between them at any given time. So that's the whole thing, right? Now you get the choice. And honestly, it's quite fun. And it fits into the setting of the game world. You have to understand that all of this fits in well. It's not like they've given you a female character because the fans have needed it. They've given it also because it adds to the history and lore of the setting. Where in ancient Grecian times... both male and females were conscripted into war, where both of them had equal opportunities, and that fits in brilliantly. What's also fascinating here is the actual attention to the historical figures. So you actually end up meeting Herodotus, who is actually known as the world's first historian, and Ubisoft's take on him is pretty cool. You end up meeting guys like Pericles, who actually was known as the father of democracy. You end up meeting Socrates. You end up meeting, you even end up dealing with, you know, mythical creatures like Medusa. So there's a lot of cool stuff they managed to do with the source material. And what I like here is that, see, while Assassin's Creed Origins, for most part, I think 70-75% of the game was basically about the realities of dealing with Egypt. And, you know, the remaining 25% was the cool stuff where you'd have the protagonist get on some weird acid trip and find himself up against a giant snake, and that is all in his head. But here what they've done is they've taken that usual nonsense and put that into the game world with proper justification. they exist within the game realm and not in the character's head. With
So speaking of that, is there some of that animus crap which used to be there in previous games and like, you know, link you to as a future person who's actually living the life of an assassin?
So, but for those of you who are unaware, the animus is basically Ubisoft's take on the Oculus Go and Oculus Quest. Yeah, essentially it's that. In this game, it's quite literally that. So now the general conceit in every Assassin's Creed game is that you're not playing that historical figure. You're playing a scientist or an explorer or someone who is living the life of that character through their genes virtually. And that is done in this game through a headset that looks very much like the Oculus Go or Oculus Quest. And yes, that is still there. That's still a thing. The modern day elements are, while we can't go into too much detail for embargo reasons, what we will say is that, what I will say at least, is that they're pretty well fleshed out. And you actually feel that that Ubisoft's coming to terms and putting it together in a fashion that matters. The last time it did matter, to me at least, was during the whole Assassin's Creed 2 arc, where you played as Desmond Miles, and then, you know, that ended with Assassin's Creed 3 and, you know, all that stuff that went down there. But here, it's you get the sense with the character they're going in. She's the same one from Origins, Leila Hassan, that they know what they're doing, that they're actually tying in things together, and that is a greater good to it. But to me, the best thing, and this is the same thing they did with Origins, is that there are some really cool Easter eggs. So like with in Origins, there's that one Easter egg in one of the game files when you're looking at the real world stuff as Leila Hassan, which basically suggests that Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs take place in the same universe because one of the Asperger, one of the companies in the game, one of their executives was assassinated by Aiden Pierce from Watch Dogs 1. You know, the guy with the handkerchief mask.
The iconic Aiden
Pierce. And here they do. And here it's a lot more on the nose, because when you're out of the animus and you're looking at the real present day world in game, you actually find stuff like a rabbit's figure, and you actually find a Splinter Cell, a set of Splinter Cell goggles. And that is an iconic set of goggles where Leila Hassan actually looks at it and says, I can't tell if this is third echelon or fourth echelon. And to me, that's a big deal that you're actually recognizing that, because the last Splinter Cell game was Blacklist and that was third echelon. So,
yeah, hype. So now waiting for, you know, somebody to say that The Crew 2 also takes place in the same universe. And
no, we don't talk about The Crew 2 in a post-Forza Horizon 4 world.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
Yeah, so in the next Assassin's Creed game, you'll probably find a bunch of people dancing randomly. And hey, there's Just Dance also, which also takes place in the same universe.
Yeah, so I get what you're trying to say. Just Dance
releases in the same month as Odyssey, but I don't think it takes place in the same universe.
But yeah, no, Pranay does make a valid point. For a lot of people, it may seem shoehorned. And I wouldn't blame them at all for thinking that. But for fans, it's a nice nod. Simple as that. In terms of gameplay, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. See, with Origins, what was really cool was it felt like Dark Souls, but wasn't as tough. You always felt that you could get past most obstacles. And towards the end, it became really hilarious because, so the level scaling was so weird at the beginning, where you're probably at level 6 or 7 and everything you see is like 12, 13, 14. And it's like the game pummels you into thinking you need to spend a lot of time grinding, which is ridiculous because by the time you reach the end, everything is ridiculously easy. With here though, the gap is a lot smaller. So I could be at level 8. I can still take on enemies at level 10, level 12, max to max.
But like, you'd be pushing it for level 12. And the game indicates that to you with the... instead of just showing you, like, suppose you're level 10 and you see a level 11 or 12, you'll just see the number. When you look at 13 and 14, there'll be like a red circle, or in red, it'll basically telling you that, you know, it's going to be really hard or don't bother going for this right now. And they've made a lot of changes to combat. Like I said, the Spartan kick, lots of active abilities, stuff like that. And I still wouldn't really call it Dark Souls, probably inspired from that.
Yeah,
just
now
like
it's...
how God of War is inspired from it, probably in the same vein.
But then I wouldn't even think, right now it's definitely not Dark Souls, not in Odyssey. Let's make it very clear, because of the abilities Mike talked about. One is obviously the Spartan Kick, which we...
it still feels like really, it doesn't feel slow like in Origins.
It doesn't. And
but
like,
it still has weight to it. Like when you do a Spartan Kick, it still feels good, even when you do it to like a bear or a snake, and yes, you can do that.
And what's, I mean, it's not just the Spartan kick. You actually have abilities like ghost arrows that go through walls. You can actually warp to an enemy and kill them and then chain another
attack.
Yeah,
it's literally like that teleports behind you meme almost when you do that with the spear.
So it's like, in a way, they've also borrowed from Final Fantasy 15 with the warp moves. And there are a lot of these. So what ends up happening is, even if you're a couple of levels below the enemies, there is still a way for you to get past them. You can still use these skills and make the fight a bit easier. And I kind of did that inadvertently because at early on in the game, you meet someone who, you know, well, spoiler, betrays you to some degree, and you want to chase that person down. According to how the game wants you to play, you're supposed to do something else before you go there. But me being me, wanted to do that first. And I got there, I was underleveled. But because I basically used the geography, I found myself jumping on a ledge, waited for the enemies to come up the ledge, and I just used a Spartan kick every second to throw them off. So what happens is they fall, the kick gives them damage, the fall from that height gives them damage, and they die in a hit, two hits. So you can do all that stuff and, you know, glitch the game. Not exactly glitch the game, but circumvent how the game wants you to play to get by.
I wouldn't really call that glitching or circumventing. It's just kind of that they've thought that people would do this. Because when I was talking to you while we were playing the similar section, you did you did the second part, I'd say, before the first part, and the game actually reacted to that. What I did is I did the first part first, but then to go to part two, you still need to go somewhere else first to get a clue. But because you can use your Eagle Icaros to like explore around, and you at least there isn't really any, it's not really a blockade which says that you're flying too far away or anything, because I flew quite far away and I was like, oh, this is where I need to go. But the game still told me like, you know, you need to go here and check here first. I was like, you know, forget that. Just went here, did that, and got the quest ending, got the experience. So, and yeah, like the world actually reacts to these things. There are, choice actually matters. There are a few, in each chapter, I'd say there are a few key moments where what you do will change things. And you have multiple save slots. So I was like, let me try this out. So in one of the, what seemed like a very important moment in the earlier portion of the game, I just did what I felt was right and progressed with the story. And then I was like, you know, let me see what happens if you do the other thing. So I reloaded that save and did the other thing. And yeah, shit got real. And I think that would have changed a lot of how the game played after that. Because there's this whole notoriety and faction thing going on throughout with the Spartans and Athenians. And also, like, you know, how in GTA, you can, like, just take out or, like, just go and beat up NPCs, beat up random people walking. Cops will start coming after you. You can hide and you get away. Over here, there are mercenaries.
Yeah, and
people put bounties on you. Mercenaries are usually quite high level. They're really difficult to fight. Treat them like boss fights, essentially. Or if you're like one of the 1% overlap between Etrian Odyssey and Assassin's Creed fans, FOEs. So
I mean, yeah. And then actually what Mike said about how the quest reacts and how the world reacts to how you play the game kind of does remind me a bit of Mass Effect, where in the sense that what you do does shape so certain decisions and outcomes.
Yeah, so and how like far is that choice aspect embedded into the story?
So it's pretty deeply embedded. And what the thing is, it's to the point where Ubisoft, the game has 9 different endings.
Mm.
And Ubisoft's pretty much said that, you know what, we've given you save slots so you can experiment.
Mm.
So, and there are key moments. It's obvious that there are key moments. Unlike in Mass Effect where, you know, the last few games, where games prior to Andromeda would make it very clear what the good or bad option is, here there's no such thing. It's very well laid out.
Yeah, you have to live with your decisions, basically.
So, for example, you could, let's say, hypothetically, lie to another character about the existence of another.
Hmm.
And that would actually have a trickle, that actually have repercussions on how the game continues going forward.
Yeah, so is Assassin's Creed Odyssey the new Witcher 3?
I wouldn't go as far as
better music though.
I wouldn't go as far as to compare it to Witcher 3 simply because Witcher 3's quest lines were a lot more complex.
Hmm.
Wherein you start something like the Bloody Baron quest line and you end it in such a fashion that you didn't know how you don't remember even how it began. It's they're very more long winded. Here, a lot of the quests are a lot shorter. You wouldn't have something as long as epic.
But they aren't like, you know, the generic fetch quests. Exactly. They actually put in effort over here. So I like, if you want to compare it to The Witcher 3, it feels like a lot of those elements are borrowed and made more bite-sized, I'd say.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. So, like, for example, you could, one mission early on is to essentially, it's a side quest where you're basically looking for a crew of a ship, all right? You end up finding, the quest is done in such a way that it takes you to the other side of this island. You end up having to go in the sea, you end up having to punch a bunch of sharks. Find out what happens, and you go back, and your reward there is getting a new crew member for your ship,
which gives you a stat boost.
There you go, crew in Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh no, that tie in. So that's just one quest, right?
Yeah.
But the way it's laid out to you is that in past games it'll be laid out to you in such a fashion where there's one generic person who needed help, but here they actually put effort in. The person who's giving you the quest is clearly in love with some member of her crew and really wants her back, and you can tell by the way she describes her, so that makes the entire thing gives you more reason to be invested in it. Right. Or there's another quest which has you hunting down specific animal types, but then again the rewards you get for it do also impact the gameplay, and it does tie into the lore because they're related to the Greek god Artemis. So they end up doing some really cool things in their quest lines where, fine, it's not as complex or convoluted as The Witcher 3, but at the end of the day, you do feel like you're progressing forward, and the items you get are what help you go forward. So, for example, with Witcher 3, you're playing through a questline for the story. Here, you're playing it for more about knowing about the game world and getting cool loot at the end of it.
Oh, yeah. The loot thing is still a big deal. Like, it was in Origins. Rare, epic, legendary loot is a thing over here. You can upgrade any of your gear to your current level, which is
really cool.
Yeah, because you don't need to actually, like, obviously, if you see a mercenary, you can see what you're going to get rewarded with if you kill the mercenary. Like, usually it's some good gear and, like, good money or whatever. But yeah, it's always good to know that regardless of what gear you have, you can upgrade it. Now, granted, you'll miss some perks, which is basically the engraving system in the game, which gives you, like, 6% armor, 2% more poison damage, stuff like that. But you will always be able to upgrade your gear through, like, you know, the, like, basic materials you get by, like, just exploring and killing random animals and stuff for, like, soft leather and stuff like that. But, yeah, you can upgrade all your stuff. Eventually, I'd still say, like, you know, stick with the rare and epic and maybe legendary, but rare and epic stuff is usually better because you get to customize it a bit more. And, yeah, it's always good because, like, even that... the gear you picked up in the beginning of the game, while it might be a few points lower than some of the epic gear you find now, you can still upgrade it to, like, your current level. Always good. And it does, like, at least there didn't seem to be any, I'd say, drawback of upgrading your gear at different blacksmiths. All of them could help you out. While they might have different stuff they sell, they'll all be able to upgrade you the same way, which is good.
Yeah, so is there anything else you guys want to say about this game?
So, visually, one, it's really great. So, that's not just something to keep in
mind.
Like,
Rishi played it on the Xbox One X. And I played it on the PS4 Pro. We also played a preview build on the Xbox One X as well.
It looks really good. But there's one thing to keep in mind is that the photo mode on Xbox One is broken. In the sense that... By broken, I mean it got Microsofted. In the sense that you can't save screenshots locally on your Xbox One hard drive.
Save photos.
You can't save photos. Yeah. Sorry, photos. From photo mode. If you're using the photo mode, which is pretty robust in this game, it doesn't get saved to your Xbox hard drive.
Can't you share it to Mixlr or something?
Wait, it gets worse. You can upload them first. They get automatically uploaded to Xbox Live, and they're on Ubisoft.com's Assassin's Creed Odyssey portal. When that opens, you can find it there, which is stupid because on PS4 and PC they're available locally.
Yeah, on PS4, whenever you take a screenshot, it just gets saved to your PS4 like a normal console.
With this game, they've taken that route, and it's really tragic because this game is glorified screenshot porn. There are so many cool things you want to see that you want to take screens of. I mean, when you get to Athens for the first time and you're at Athens at night, it looks really stunning, and you want to do that, but you can't. So that's one point of concern. But the other point of concern is one that's a little more immediate. It's what we'd like to call the Ubisoft AAA problem, wherein if you want to buy a Ubisoft game, if it's a non-indie, if it's not a small Ubisoft game, there are multiple editions. With it comes a spreadsheet.
Yeah, before we get into that, so while the screenshot thing is a problem with photo mode on the Xbox One X, at least in its current state on the PS4 Pro, there are situations where NPCs glitch out. NPCs, like, I've seen an NPC just, like, almost flicker while walking in the cutscene in the background. stuff like that. So you think they'd fix this? Hopefully, like, a patch shows up soon which fixes this, because we're already on version 1.02 as of today.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something to keep in mind. But yeah, it's a AAA game. It's a Ubisoft game. The best of both worlds. So Microsoft Excel gets to, like, show its muscle over here. Before we get into all the editions in general, India gets 4 editions.
Yeah.
So if you pre-order the standard edition at Games Shop and a few other retailers, you get upgraded to the Omega edition. The Omega edition is basically what used to be the deluxe edition as of last year. There was the same thing with Far Cry 5, Watch Dogs 2. Omega edition gives you temporary XP, temporary money boost in the game, and it gives you some armor. In addition to that, you get an art book, which is 32 pages, and you get a map poster type thing. This is what most people would end up getting. There's also a gold edition, which is the standard edition plus season pass. Not the Omega edition plus season pass, so you don't get any of the physical stuff or the digital stuff. Medusa edition, basically standard edition plus season. Let me actually check if there's a season pass.
Oh yeah, and also to keep in mind, the season pass for Assassin's Creed Odyssey obviously has, you know, content for the game, but it also brings you Assassin's Creed 3 HD Remastered, which should come as no surprise, because the same team that's worked on Assassin's Creed Odyssey worked on Assassin's Creed 3. So, yeah.
So the Medusa edition has a statue by UB Collectibles, which is what they normally do. 64-page art book, not 32-page. It has a map, it has a soundtrack CD, and it has the same digital content. No season pass, 9,000 rupees.
Yeah, so that's something to keep in mind. You're paying 9,000 rupees, but you're not getting a season pass.
So you could buy a season pass now using PSN credit, which you can also buy. But yeah, 9,000 rupees, no season pass. Gold edition is more expensive than the standard at 7,000 rupees. Wow. Which just has the game and the season pass. So yeah. No physical stuff. So, yeah, this is pretty expensive. I'd still suggest get the Omega edition. And if you like the game a lot, you can buy the season pass later or whatever.
Yeah, because the season passes tend to get discounted. When I got mine for Origins, I paid, I think, 60% off, 70% off. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, because the base game is massive over here. But, yeah, like, just 7,000 rupees for gold edition when you get no physical stuff, not a good deal. At least in the US, if you buy the gold edition, you get a steelbook, which is like exclusive to the gold edition. Over here, you don't get any steelbook. So these are the editions which come to India. You have standard, which is what you'll get after launch day or in some other retailers. Omega edition, which is what pre-orders get you for the standard. Gold edition and Medusa edition. Now, outside, let me load up the spreadsheet. There's a deluxe edition which is available in the US, which gives you a deluxe pack, which is some stuff which is not included in the Omega edition. Ultimate edition, which is for like PC via Uplay.
Wait. So what? Ultimate edition, right? So isn't that like the topmost tier of anything? Because it's called Ultimate.
In terms of digital content and game content, yes, but not in physical content, because you don't get a steelbook, you don't get a world map, you don't get soundtrack, you don't get art book, you don't get figurine, you don't get lithograph.
Wait, how is it called Ultimate?
No, if you want the real Ultimate Edition, it's the Spartan or Pantheon Edition, which are Uplay exclusives, which have two different statues, like one in each one of them, and it has all this physical stuff.
This is a bit much.
Yeah, it is. It kind of is. Like, I'm just looking at the spreadsheet and laughing at this, but this is basically standard with Ubisoft
stuff. And wait, this also doesn't take into account that certain territories have DLC locked behind promotions. So in the US, if you're buying from Walmart or if you're buying Totino's Pizza Rolls, yes, you get DLC for the game that's exclusive.
They did not pay us to mention them on this podcast.
The point we're getting at is... Even if you're buying the most expensive edition of the game,
which, by
you're
the way,
not getting everything.
No, we need to get into this. So last year, with Assassin's Creed Origins, the gold edition got you all the game content, basically. Hmm. And that was $100 in the US. I don't remember what the price was in India. It probably wasn't 7,000. Maybe it was. But now the gold edition doesn't actually have everything. It's the ultimate, which is more. So if you want a base game plus deluxe pack plus season pass, you need the ultimate, not the gold edition anymore. This is the opposite of what Forza has done. With Forza Horizon 4, they actually included the expansion pass with the ultimate edition, which wasn't the case in the previous games. So yeah, that's something.
Yeah, it's like it's become super complicated. And long story short, if you want the game with everything, we wouldn't recommend you buy any of this. We'd recommend you buy the cheapest edition possible. We recommend that you buy the cheapest edition possible and then buy everything else at a discount when it goes on sale.
Or just wait and buy the game for cheap.
I don't know if you want the Omega Edition. The thing with Ubisoft, the deluxe or pre-order editions is, I've noticed they've become very difficult to find post-launch for a lot of games. Like Far Cry 5, you can't find it easily. A lot of sellers on Amazon seem to have it, but it's not the one meant for India. It's usually another region copy, which is supposed to be cheaper, but is actually more expensive. Watch Dogs is impossible to find the deluxe edition, right? Watch Dogs 2, sorry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I'd say if you want just the standard edition, you can buy it whenever. But if you want this particular edition, I'd say get it soon. So, yeah.
Right then. So, the games we've been playing this week. I didn't play anything, so why don't you tell us what you played, Rishi?
So, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, a lot of it. It's pretty good. Our review should be up on the site by the time this is live, hopefully. I've been playing also quite a bit of, aside from Assassin's Creed Odyssey, still playing Spider-Man. Close to that platinum, probably gonna be my first platinum.
Can you buy it?
What,
the platinum trophy?
No.
Oh,
you can probably buy an account which has a platinum trophy.
Yeah, but like, no. So yeah, that
Nier Automata has spoiled me.
Yoko Taro should make the next Spider-Man game. That would be god tier.
Do you want Spider-Man to step on you?
So yeah, so I've been playing those two, and that aside, probably gonna ease myself back in Overwatch soon, because you know my favorite character got a rework and I want to see how bad it gets, because Torbjorn fanboy. Yeah, that. Mike,
Assassin's Creed Odyssey, in fact, have put almost everything on hold to like play this because it's good and because embargo. Played a bit more of Mega Man 11. Probably will talk about this on the next episode of the podcast. Been playing it on Switch. And other than that, been playing Dragalia Lost. Yes, I made a US iTunes account to check it out. So far, pretty standard free-to-play mechanics, but good production values, very good music. And
you didn't play that Monster Hunter Stories?
Not much. I just downloaded the demo, but I played it on 3DS. So I haven't really played much of it on iOS, but I did check the first half an hour of it, and it runs and looks a lot better than it does on 3DS. But yeah, the interesting thing about Monster Hunter Stories is it basically makes Game Freak, the developers of Pokemon, look like amateurs, because the Pokemon games on 3DS look pretty terrible on a tech level. And Monster Hunter Stories does all of that much better, much more colorful, stuff like that. So, yeah, basically that's all I've been playing.
So. Right then. So that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. And you can also check out this show via your podcast apps, such as Apple Podcasts on iPhone and Google Podcasts on your Android phone. And if you do that, please do subscribe to us and rate us on these platforms so that, you know, more people can discover us. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulsen, whose album PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.